So good morning.
Today
is Earth Day. And so I thought I'd talk a little bit about the Earth. It was only a few decades ago that this was designated as Earth Day. It was kind of interesting. So it's a day to honor, as we say, Mother Earth. I think all of us would like to make every day Earth Day, as we say. You know, any day that we designate, you know, Mother's Day, Black History Month, whatever, you know, whatever it is that we designate a time, it's good for us to do that. But actually what we hope is to be aware, fully aware of the Earth and every aspect of our reality. So that's kind of what I'd like to talk about today. It's also a day when there's going to be a march in support of scientists and science, which is another interesting thing to think about in terms of the Dharma, because in a way we can think of science as seeing clearly. So how do we see clearly? What we do with that is another matter. But seeing clearly is a part of what we want to do as human beings. So we all know that we cannot exist without the Earth. And the question is, how often do we remember that? How often does it impact us that we are of the Earth? Our shape, the actual shape of us, is determined in part by the fact that the Earth holds our feet down on the ground, that there's gravity. Our hands are made so that we can pick things up, right? The very shape of our bodies and our minds is due to the reality that we live in. This earth with gravity, with air, with rocks and trees, with the kinds of food that we eat. So we are made for this reality. We are made for this earth. It's not made for us. We're made for it. We're shaped by it. Even the things that we think are beautiful. Well, why do we think we're beautiful? They're beautiful because we're made that way. We have eyes. We have ears. We have nose. We have tongue. Even though the Heart Sutra says, no eyes, no ears, no tongue, right? That's one way of saying we have eyes. We have ears. We have tongue. Not fixed, not essential, not ours. They're the Earth's eyes. So in a way, we cannot even say that we depend on the Earth. Because that makes it sound like we could take it or leave it. You know, like, well, we depend on the Earth. But we could depend on something else. And it's true, we could fly off someplace, but then we'd have to create another Earth, right? Or visit another Earth, because we're made for the Earth. So we can't get away from that. So one, our question then is how we honor that which supports and creates us with our lives. How do we remember who we are, and how do we honor that? So one way to honor that is to sit down. When we sit down, we can feel the fact of our butt on the cushion or the chair. We can stop our spinning thoughts, right, that whoosh, take us out to some reality that we concoct. And we can actually experience the concrete reality of a breathing body, of the feel of gravity, the fact of tactile touch. We can cultivate an awareness when we sit of what it actually feels like to be a human being. That stillness, that place of refuge, that place of stability, we say that kind of like Fudo has the stability of a mountain, the stability of the earth. But we also act. in our everyday life, we act to express our gratitude for all that we're given. We act to express our respect and care. This attitude, this orientation, is a central value of all the wise teachers of the world. And Dogen, Ehe Dogen, was one of those wise teachers. So Dogen tells us that all beings, sentient and insentient, living and non-living, humans, animal, plant, rocks, coffee cups, water glasses, everything is Buddha nature. It doesn't have Buddha nature. It is Buddha nature. And he says that he regrets that most people, he says, do not realize that the universe is proclaiming the actual body of the Buddha. Since they, or we, can only perceive what is superficial, what is made up of our ideas and projections. We see the surface of things, because we create the surface of things. And he says, we do not then perceive Buddha's shape, form, and voice in the landscape. When we fall into the habit of defining reality with our concocted notions, usually it's always in terms of our own needs, right? Our own self-centeredness. Only in terms of how things relate to us, how they can be used by us. We do this all the time, right? And a part of delusions, part of the makeup of delusion, that we think of things only in terms of how they relate to us. So we must take care to unseat this orientation. You know, like get the crowbar out, because we get very stuck. We see things only as they relate to us. So if we want to be good citizens, as they say, of this earth, and we want to be active participants in a healthy, vibrant world, our practice requires us to listen to what others, all others, have to say to us without immediately slotting them into preconceived notions. I mean, we can see this in our relationship to other humans, right? We think we know this person. We think we know who they are. We think we know, oh, they must be this or they must be that. But it's also true of objects. It's true of dogs and cats and people. All aspects of reality. Dogen says, the way insentient beings expound the true teachings should not be understood to be like the way sentient beings do. So he says, even rocks preach the Dharma. All dimensions of reality preach the Dharma. And we have to be careful that we don't have a preconceived notion of how they're teaching us. He says, we should not usurp the voices of the living, nor conjecture about the non-living beings in terms of them. So let's stop for a minute. So when we usurp the voices of the living, we are deciding what they're saying to us. We're not really listening. It's like you're in a conversation with somebody and you're so busy thinking about the next thing that you're going to say. Have you ever done that? Right? That you don't listen to what the other person is saying. You're just right there, you know? Getting your point across. I want to get my... And then it's like you have this opaqueness to reality. So he tells us you should not usurp the voices of the living. Don't take their voices. Don't colonize them with your own ideas. Actually really listen to the voices of the living. And also, and this is a very interesting next step, don't conjecture about non-living beings in terms of living beings. In other words, don't assume that you will understand. We need to examine the thoughtlessness that we have and release our minds from self-centeredness. When we listen, we have an opportunity to be truly taught. When Dogen says that the rocks preach the Dharma, he's also telling us that the rocks preach the Dharma in rock voices, you know? And we may not understand rock language, but that doesn't mean it's not real. It just means that we don't understand it. We don't understand other human languages. If someone were speaking Chinese to me, I wouldn't know what they were saying to me. I wouldn't get the meaning. I might get the feeling by the tone or the posture or whatever, but I wouldn't get the meaning. But if I spent enough time with someone speaking Chinese to me, I would learn Chinese. I would learn to hear the meaning. So this is the same way. If we don't assume that we understand, but if we spend time, if we become intimate with something, we can learn what it is that it's trying to say to us, what it is it's preaching to us. But we have to let go of this fundamental self-centeredness to be able to do it. We have to, we call it nature, right? You say we're going out into nature. What's nature but us? So Dogen says that these are sutras. Sutras are words and expression of the Buddha, right? That these sutras are the entire universe. This is Dogen speaking. Are the entire universe, mountains and rivers, and the great earth and plants and trees. They are self and others. They are taking meals, wearing clothes. They are confusion and dignity. These are all sutras. These are all the Buddha's preaching directly. The entire universe, mountains, rivers, the great earth, plants and trees, self and others, taking meals, wearing clothes, even confusion and dignity. So there's nothing that's not included if we live this life of lack of self-centeredness. Again, Dogen, when you endeavor in right practice, the voices and figures of streams and the sounds and shapes of mountains together with you bounteously deliver 84,000 gatas, which are... Gatas are usually remembrances that you use, small verses that you use to recall yourself. Just as you are unsparing and surrendering fame and wealth and body mind, so are the brooks and the mountains. Let me read that again. When you endeavor in right practice, the voices and figures of streams and the sounds and shapes of mountains together with you bounteously deliver 84,000 gatas. Just as you are unsparing and surrendering fame and wealth and body mind, so are the brooks and the mountains. In other words, they're giving all the time. So this is not just a private experience, this sense of intimacy with the world. It's not just something we say, oh, well, this is nice, I like this, I'm going to cultivate this good feeling. It requires us to see, to act, to support the earth. When we do that, when we see, we can encounter despair in this world as it is now. You know, the coral reefs, the groundwater, the ways in which we treat each other as human beings, that is difficult sometimes, isn't it? It's difficult to see. It's difficult to see that, or it can be. But this world that we live in and the Buddha way is not meant to deliver us to despair or hopelessness by any means. The way of the bodhisattva, of devotion to this world, requires that we let go of perfectionism and the sense that we are the ones that is going to do it all by ourselves, right? It's much more the spirit of participation with others, all others. We don't necessarily see the end game. We don't need to see the end game to know that a life that embodies the quality that Dogen Zenji calls joyful mind is a life dedicated to waking up, regardless of what's happening. So this joyful mind arises when we devote ourselves in reality with a clear eye and a kind heart to caring for this world in all the ways that we can. So the great I column Zen teacher John Muir said, "I wish I were so drunk and sequoial that I could preach the green brown woods to all the juiceless world. Descending from this divine wilderness like John the Baptist, eating Douglas squirrels and world wild honey, or wild anything, and crying, 'Repent, for the kingdom of sequoias is at hand.'" You want to hear that again? "I wish I were so drunk and sequoial that I could preach the green brown woods to all the juiceless world. Descending from this divine wildness like a John the Baptist, eating Douglas squirrels and wild honey or wild anything, and crying, 'Repent, the kingdom of sequoias is at hand.'" So we can just see John Muir like racing down the wilderness, right? Preaching the sutras that he heard in his wanderings. If you read his writings, right, he knows that the rocks preach the Dharma. He heard the preaching of the sequoias and the sierras and all the little things as well. And this sounds, you know, but we don't have to go to the beach or to the mighty sequoias to have this experience. We, you know, the water in a toilet bowl goes down in a set direction. Isn't that miraculous? Right? It actually goes, and it goes, I don't know if you know this, it goes the other direction on the other side of the world. Down in Australia, it goes, up here it goes one way, down in Australia it goes the other way. So, you know, we can take Dogen and John Muir and all these people as Joanna Macy, all these people as great bodhisattvas who are pointing the way to tell us how to respond as bodhisattvas in this world so that we have both stillness and stability of a mountain and a vigorous response. I'd like to read you one more sutra if I could. You ready? This is kind of a fairy tale. Some of you may have heard this before. It takes a little while. Are you comfortable? This is by the poet Gary Snyder. And it's called Smokey the Bear Sutra. Once in the Jurassic, about 150 million years ago, the great Sun Buddha in this corner of the infinite void gave a great discourse to all the assembled elements and energies, to the standing beings, the walking beings, the flying beings, the sitting beings, even the grasses, to the number of 13 billion, each one born from a seed, assembled there, a discourse concerning enlightenment on the planet Earth. Quote. This is the great Sun Buddha speaking. In some future time, there will be a continent called America. It will have great centers of power, such as Pyramid Lake, Walden Pond, Mount Rainier, Big Sur, the Everglades, and so forth, and powerful nerves and channels, such as the Columbia River, Mississippi River, and Grand Canyon. The human race in that era will get into troubles all over its head and practically wreck everything in spite of its own strong, intelligent Buddha nature.
The twisting strata of the great mountains and the pulsings of great volcanoes are my love burning deep in the earth. My obstinate compassion is schist and basalt and granite, to be mountains to bring down the rain. In the future American era, I shall enter a new form to cure the world of loveless knowledge that seeks with blind hunger and mindless rage, eating food that will not fill it. And he showed himself in his true form of Smokey the Bear. A handsome, smoky-colored brown bear standing on his hind legs, showing that he was aroused and watchful. Bearing in his right paw the shovel that digs to the truth beneath appearances, cuts the roots of useless attachments, and flings damp sand on the fires of greed and war. In his left paw is the mudra of commanderly display, indicating that all creatures have the right, full right to live to their limits, and that deer, rabbits, chipmunks, snakes, dandelions, and lizards all grow in the realm of the Dharma. Wearing the blue work overall symbolic of slaves and laborers, the countless people oppressed by a civilization that claims to save but only destroys. Wearing the broad-brimmed hat of the West, symbolic of the forces that guard the wilderness, which is the natural state of the Dharma and the true path of beings on earth. All true paths lead through mountains. With a halo of smoke and flame behind, the forest fires of the Kali Yuga, fires caused by the stupidity of those who think things can be gained and lost, whereas in truth all is contained, vast and free, in the blue sky and the green earth of one mind. Round-bellied to show his kind nature, and that the great earth has food enough for everyone who loves her and trusts her. Trampling underfoot wasteful freeways and needless suburbs, smashing the worms of capitalism and totalitarianism, indicating the task. His followers becoming free of cars, houses, canned food, universities, and shoes. Master the three mysteries of their own body, speech, and mind, and fearlessly chop down the rotten trees and prune out the stick limbs of this country, America, and then burn the leftover trash. Wrathful but calm, austere but comic, Smokey the Bear will illuminate those who would help him. For those who would hinder or slander him, he will put them out. Thus his great mudra, Nama Samanta Vajranam Chanda Maharashana Sachas Pum Traka Ham Mam. I dedicate myself to the universal diamond by this raging fury destroyed. And he will protect those who love woods and rivers, gods and animals, hobos and madmen and madwomen, prisoners and sick people, musicians, playful women, hopeful children. And if anyone is threatened by advertising, air pollution, or the police, they will shout Smokey the Bear's war spell. Drown their butts. Crush their butts. Drown their butts. Crush their butts, B-U-T-T-S. And Smokey the Bear will surely appear to put the enemy out with his Vajra shovel. Now those who recite the sutra and then try to put it in practice will accumulate merit as countless as the sands of Arizona and Nevada. Will help save the planet Earth from total oil slick. Will enter the age of harmony of humans and nature. Will win the tender love and caresses of men, women, and beasts. They will always have ripe blackberries to eat and a sunny spot under a pine tree to sit at. And in the end will win highest perfect enlightenment. Thus we have heard. This is an expression of the kind of notice that I crush their butts, you know? There's something strong and vigorous about this, right? It's not, you know, we sit still, we cultivate compassion, we have this, you know, really inclusive heart, and we also have this energy of Smokey the Bear, you know? So, I think I'll end with that.
Thank you.